Anyway, money and markets. The big issue right now in the marketplace is Brexit. Britain is voting on whether or not to exit the European Union on June 23rd. The polls are neck and neck right now. The Economist is running polls, and we'll keep that link to the Economist polls at the top of geopolitical. 43% now say leave, 42% stay. If you dig down and look at the numbers among different groups, the rich want to stay, the poor want to leave. It's very much the poor being against centralization and against immigration, as those two things are not only working against them, but working against preserving any kind of productive culture the way they're going down. The Brexit vote, if Britain should vote to leave, there's going to be another referendum by Scotland. And the question is if Scotland, who would like the UK to stay in the EU, but if they leave, is Scotland then going to leave the UK? It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. There are big concerns in the Europe financial system. If Brexit votes yes, you're really going to see Teutonic plate shift. And then the question is, in the elections in France and Germany next year, will the European Union hold, or will it have to reconfigure into a Northern European group? Not surprisingly, we see Germany bringing back the army. So Pew did a study, and that link is also up on the website, showing what the sort of response to or support for the EU was throughout Europe. Let me just read one of their conclusions. The institution's strongest backers of the poll, 72%, the Hungarian 61%, and many other nations support is tepid. Just 27% of the Greeks, 38% of the French, 47% of the Spanish have a favorable opinion of the EU. Notably, 44% of the British view the EU favorably, including 53% of the Scottish. 38% support from the French is not a very good sign. So, and again, we have the French elections in 2017. What we're seeing both in the EU and the United States is that the productive members of the general population are fed up with things that lower their productivity and skim and steal their savings. And the gripes of the productive members of the general population are quite legitimate. If anything, their culture reflects a deep understanding of what productivity is and what habits need to happen to be productive, and they appreciate what the assault on their culture means. It was interesting when I was in the Australian Leadership Forum, many people in that group could not fathom the corruption that was really happening in the U.S. general population, and the Americans who were there, I think, were in a bit of a state of denial about it. Anyway, so Brexit will come on top of a slowdown in the world economy. And over the last week, since last week's Money and Market, we've seen really a chorus of voices announcing everything from global slowdown to recession to even more dire warnings. The World Bank has issued a dismal outlook for the global economy. That comes last week when I talked about OECD, Japan, and IMF doing the same. But the World Bank is basically warning of risk of a sharp slowdown and cut its growth forecasts. I put up a link to several, sort of a summary in charts from the Wall Street Journal describing the World Bank projection. One of the things they show is that now at the global slowdown rates, it's going to take much longer for the emerging markets and the frontier markets to catch up with the G7 nations in terms of per capita. What they don't mention, which I think is very important to understand, is that per capita convergence is not a global phenomenon. It's an Asian phenomenon. Asia, India, and China are really on a trajectory to close the gap between their per capita income and the G7 nations. But the rest of the emerging markets doesn't look even close. So convergence right now is an Asian phenomena. What's happening in the G7 countries is that productivity is really flatlining for a number of reasons. And the second quarter wrap-up is going to be focused on productivity and prosperity and what we do about it. So I'll defer to then. One of the things they noted is causing tremendous market uncertainty and dampening investments. And surveys of the companies indicate this as well, is political tensions in the U.S. and Europe. Needless to say, what's happened in the U.S. Presidential election is, I would say, deeply dampening of businesses' desire to take risks. So politics has clearly entered a danger zone in many places for many reasons. But I'll give you a perfect example. Next week, we're going to publish Dr. Laura Thompson's interview on how to handle toxic vaccines. Laura had, when I interviewed her, had just seen Vaxxed, and we'll post on Saturday our Just a Taste video, which describes seeing Vaxxed as in response to a very strong recommendation that she gave it. I went online and watched a lot of the interviews. Apparently, after many of the screenings, the producers and some of the mothers who are in the movie, as well as people very active or people interviewed and active in this area of the connection between vaccinations and autism, are interviewed. So I watched a whole series of interviews this week. So let me give you some statistics. There is one projection in Vaxxed from an MIT researcher, very credible doctor. One out of two American children is expected to be autistic by 2032 if we continue with the current heavy schedules and the rate of growth of autism continues. 80% out of it's much more likely for boys to have become autistic than girls. 80% of boys will be autistic by 2032 is the projection, and four times more African Americans than whites get or boys get autism. The numbers are quite astonishing, and what you're talking about doing is, when one mother mentions that when a family has an autistic child, it's a $5 million hit. They also mention they're in the process of hiring an attorney because their child is about to turn 18. And unless she gets the courts to appoint her the ward of her child, the child will become a ward of the state. She says they're building institutions to house all these different wards of the state as autistic children turn to 18. It's very, very chilling. And if you look at the impact that this is having on families, so let's just assume it's only one out of five kids that has autism. That's a $5 million hit to one out of five families. Just the financial ramifications alone are devastating. Now, at the same time that we're rolling out a vaccination policy and mandates of vaccinations that will basically destroy and wipe out the male population, we are promoting women as leaders in business and government. If you look at the combination of that, and you add to that all the things that are being done to cost to drive up the cost of capital to small business, massive increase in regulatory burdens on small business, taxation, on and on and on, you're talking about a massive attack on the productive members of society, and you know the kind of things that can absolutely devastate them, devastate marriages, devastate households. So it's, you know, it's a perfect example of the many different things that are destroying productivity. But you're starting to see the general population realize, look, you know, if you look at what you're doing, you're basically making it impossible for us to function. Dare I mention transgender bathroom policies from the president? So these kinds of things are really putting politics into the danger zone. If you tell a state attorney general that a local principal has got to let the, you know, the local bully into the girls' locker room whenever he wants to go there on the, you know, just because he says, oh, well, I feel like a transgender today. I mean, that's making it impossible for the principal to just even discipline and manage the school. So, you know, you're talking about some pretty psychopathic things here. Okay. There's other warnings from different, not just governmental agencies, JP Morgan Chase warning about the possibility of a recession, market turndown, Goldman doing the same. The one I take seriously, cause I don't pay attention to those guys too much. There's a serious comment from Kiplinger last Friday. Kiplinger's the master of always saying, no, it's going to slow burn, it's not going to collapse. But this time around, Kiplinger said, no, you know, we're in a serious slowdown, and if things don't get handled right, we could get a serious turndown. So Kiplinger is also flashing, you know, warning signs, which is not good. So let's visit the markets. The U.S. dollar took a real nosedive on the employment report, and Yellen's saying she's probably not going to raise interest rates. We'll see what she does next week. So the U.S. dollar index is now down almost 5% for the month. It's still 93.99, so it's essentially at 94. Remember, we've been trading in a band from 92 to 100. As long as it doesn't break either side of that band, I think we're just in the same old, same old. If the U.S. dollar breaks below 92 and stays below, then we're in a whole different ball game. So remember, if we break 92 and stay through, you need to check back in here with money and markets. Let's look at the bond market. TLT now up 12.35% this year. That's the strongest it's been. That's a very strong response. You're seeing big global demand for long treasuries, and that's a very, very deflationary sign. Who could have believed that we would juice 13 or almost 12.5% out of the long treasury this year? The intermediate treasury ETF now up almost 6%. The aggregate bond ETF up 4.14%. And junk bonds, high yield ETF, this is baffling, up 7.43%. That's over a 22% swing. It was down more than 15% earlier in the year. The S&P ETF now almost 5% for the year, and given what the forward earnings are and the amount of debt corporations have issued to buy shares, it's just stunning to me because the earning fundamentals are not supportive of much movement up in the market. If anything, a major correction down. U.S. real estate up 7.14%. We're seeing sector changes in how the U.S. stock market sectors are managed, which may bring more money into REITs. U.S. home builders now in the positive territory, 0.86% for the year. So I think there's going to be a real effort to keep the stock market bouncing along coming into the conventions at the end of July. Then the question is, after the conventions, can they continue it through the election? I'm not sure. Depends how much they want to make sure Clinton wins. They need the Democrats to look good on the economy, and the problem is the fundamentals are poor. Okay, Europe now up 5.73% for the year. That's a big improvement. Germany still down 0.69%. That's the German ETF. Developed markets away from North America are now flat. They're up 0.24% for the year. China, the decision that we went through last year about will the China A shares be included in the MSCI index decision, that's coming up. If they say yes, we could see big new inflows into the Chinese stock markets. But their large cap Chinese ETF is now off minus 2.13% for the year, and the small caps minus 8%. The emerging markets come back. I was amazed. I thought we were going the other way, but they're back up 6.87%. I'm still concerned about whether, you know, that can swing the other way. Oil now up 8% for the year. So a meaningful recovery in oil at this point. Gold up 19.51%. Silver up 24.87%. Lots of interest in short-term trades on the precious metals, mining stocks, because some of the big hedge fund buyers have been buying. And big charts from Rambus this week on the precious metals. He's gone into precious metals this week, particularly ones below a dollar. So highly leveraged. I think it's a short-term trade, and I think you need to be very, very careful because precious metals, given the deflationary signs, could very much go the other way. The California primary, we saw obviously Donald Trump sort of lock up the nomination as a result of his complete sweep with everybody else out of the race. Clinton swept California by much better than I expected. What was very interesting was Greg Palast had several pieces about vote rigging. It looked to me like the vote rigging in California was really over the top. I had one subscriber report in the San Francisco Bay Area, very wealthy San Francisco suburb. They went to the polls at 7 a.m. in the morning. There were 12 people standing in line in front of them. They said in their neighborhood the signs were 8 signs for Sanders to every 2 for Clinton, very Democratic area. And 4 of the 12 people weren't on the ballot and couldn't vote, even though some of them had mailings confirming that they were on the ballot. They were all the four that were kind of thrown out and given provisional ballots, which don't get counted too much later, were seniors, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was Bernie Sanders getting Social Security back on the agenda. Obama in 2012 was planning on cutting or shaving Social Security, and it was Bernie Sanders who fought back and insisted that finally the president go the other way, which he just did. This last week, he endorsed an expansion of Social Security for the first time. So Sanders has been a major force to support and upgird Social Security. So it doesn't surprise me that the seniors suddenly can't vote. Anyway, I think if there had been an honest vote in California, Sanders would have probably won. But coming into that, the Tuesday sweep, whether it was the sudden surprising turnaround in the stock market or media pumping Clinton or signs of election fraud, it looked to me like the deep state really pulled out all the stops for Clinton. And it lends credence to the theory that Trump's being used to white out the Republicans and make Clinton look acceptable. Trump helped that by falling into his own mess, attacking the judge on his Trump University trial. The danger here is that Trump's going to be used to sort of gather up the men who are highly productive and sort of frustrated about what's being done to destroy their productivity. Trump expressing their anger, and he sort of organizes and catches them offsides in a way that's just going to help Clinton and sort of the beatdown that Clinton represents. It's a very ugly picture, but it's how the deep state has used women and women's lib to play that game many, many times before. Anyway, we'll have to see how it plays out. What I'm hoping for is that at least what Trump can do is bring transparency. So if you look at the disapproval rates of Trump and Clinton and the dirt available on Trump and Clinton, we could get quite an indictment on the American establishment if we get a serious food fight. And frankly, that could be relatively positive. Interestingly enough, there was a great subscriber pointed me to a column in the Financial Times Lunch with James Baker. Baker's feeling honest this day. He gave away several things. Let me just read you some quotes from the article. Remember, he's talking to a Financial Times senior reporter. Hillary Clinton was never given anything to do. She was just there at the State Department to run for president, says Baker. I would describe the turn of his phrase, making it clear that it was the deep state who was telling people what to do in allocating responsibilities in the administration rather than the president. Quote, and this is Baker speaking, "I won't get my panties in a wedge because of what I'm hearing from the political candidates. What they say in the campaign and what they do once they're in the White House are not the same thing. I don't care who wins, whoever gets to the White House. Presidents can do a lot, but they can only do so much through the system of checks and balances. We are countries of laws limited by bureaucracy and the power structure in Washington. Presidents are not unilateral rulers. If they do not know that, they will soon find out, or they will find out soon enough." Okay, so let me translate for you. What Baker's saying is, this is entertainment. Don't worry about it. These people are puppets, and they will do what we tell them to do. He's getting a little honest in his later years. Interestingly enough, the Bilderbergers are meeting right now. One of the few good signs of good news is Peggy Noonan of the Wall Street Journal was invited to the Bilderbergers. And I suppose, I hope she gets a platform there to give some legitimate feedback about destruction of productivity, because she's, if anything, more and more in her column, she's representing the populist horde. I wanted to read you something from her column on June the 4th. And remember, this is the leading, I believe, the leading editorial writer in the Wall Street Journal. "An anecdote. 2 years ago at a birthday party for a mutual friend, I bumped into a hedge fund billionaire who turned to me angrily and lashed out over something I'd written he deemed to be insufficiently conservative. I listened, merely blinking with surprise. I'm sorry to say, and removed myself from his flight path. Afterward, I thought about how he must have come to view himself. He is, as I said, vastly wealthy, but also generous, giving time and money to think tanks, groups, candidates. He must view all of this, I thought, as a targeted investment. Maybe he sees himself as having a controlling investment. Maybe he thinks he bought conservatism. I felt in a sharp new way that my criticism of the donor class had been right. Inevitably, they see to their own enthusiasms and policy priorities. This was how the GOP became the party of we don't care what Americans think about illegal immigration. Who do these Americans think they are? They think they own the place. Anyway, it's amazing to see a Wall Street Journal editorial writer so disgusted with what's going on that they increasingly represent the populist horde. If you look at the topics on the Burger Builders discussion list, it shows some of the concerns. One of the things they're talking about is cybersecurity, which is a real problem and serious taxation on the global economy. Reuters estimating it as costing more than $450 billion a year. Another is what is called precariat and middle class. That means middle class people who have wage insecurity and are really experiencing falling incomes and unemployment as a result of technological change. So that and growing inequality are clearly on everyone's minds. The other good news, in addition to Peggy Noonan getting a chance to educate the Bilderbergers about reality, is Sanders saying he's going to take his candidacy all the way to the convention. And the reason is Clinton really claims that she's got the nomination as a result of superdelegates, and it's frankly, the Democratic Party should be deeply ashamed. It's one of the most undemocratic things I've ever seen. And if you look at the superdelegates, if you look at the rigging of voting, if you look at all the sort of different games that are being played, to say that the Democratic Party is anything other than a fascist institution, ditto the Republican Party. I mean, we're looking at really fascism writ large.